Joe came around the side of the van. I know you guys have a lot to talk about, but I don't think we should stay here for long out in the open. If the Wraths or Knights find you... Wraths. Knights. Peter shook his head, but was still smiling. I still can't believe it. I mean, I can. It makes so much sense. Of course all this stuff is real. It's just so... awesome. Liv pulled back slightly from her brother. She looked to Joe, who sighed. I've been filling Peter in. He believes me, but maybe doesn't understand the severity of the situation. Of course I understand the severity, Peter said, pushing his glasses up his nose. In that one moment, Liv instantly saw the overly serious, imaginative, 8-year-old boy Peter had been when she last saw him. Her chest tightened. That doesn't mean it isn't exciting. Right, Liv said. If the Wraths know where you are, we need to get everyone out of here, and soon. Before Liv could respond, Shannon ran up to them, her shoes slapping against the sand. Liv took one look at Shannon's ashen face, and her heart dropped. It's Merrick, Shannon said. He just fell on the beach, and he won't wake up. The damage done. Cedric had never been in a room like this one before. The walls were painted in muted colors, and the smell was impossible to describe. It was a bit sour, but it also burned his nose every time he inhaled in a way that was only slightly more pleasant than breathing in ash and smoke the previous night. But even worse were the people. People perched on tiny, colorful chairs, people pacing, running their hands through their hair, people in uniforms running up and down the brightly lit halls, people crying. Cedric hated it. But he had to wait with all the others to hear whether or not Merrick was seriously injured. The horrible smell of the place, what Joe and Liv called a hospital, combined with Cedric's own guilt to form a small pit of nausea in his stomach. Liv had tried to get all of them to eat a few snacks, but the extremely orange, perfectly square crackers she offered up made Cedric's stomach clench. If she had offered him roasted boar with plum sauce, he wouldn't have been able to take even a bite. How could he eat when Merrick might be dying? And it was all his fault. For the 20th time, Cedric stood up and left the group sitting on the hard plastic chairs, all except Joe, who was talking to the healers, to walk to a large window on the other side of the room. He couldn't stop picturing the position of Merrick's body where it had fallen down in the wet sand, or the bone-white color of his face as they'd lifted him into Joe's vehicle. Merrick had hardly been breathing then. His eyes fluttered open, but it was as though he couldn't see any of them. If they'd been in Calum, Merrick would have been taken to the healer's quarters, a long, airy space on the outer edge of the castle. But in this realm, they went to the hospital, and Cedric had no idea if these busy people, in their thin, colored uniforms, would be able to help his friend. The friend Cedric had, just last night, slammed against the ground, again and again, too angry to care that he was already injured. Cedric stared out the window at the trees and buildings and hills of L.A., but he didn't really see any of it. Someone came up to stand right behind him, and he knew without turning who it was. You look tired. I am tired, Cedric replied. Cat looked out the window. It's almost beautiful from up here. When you cannot smell the trash or hear the noise, it's peaceful. Now that we are so close to going home, even I could admit not everything about Earth is terrible. Cedric refused to meet her eyes. How can we go back there without... If Merrick does not... He will. He was a bit knocked about, but we all were. He will be fine. Very soon, we are all going home together. The fierceness in her voice almost made Cedric believe her. He longed to, he did. But at the same time, his stomach roiled with guilt. Because it was not just Merrick on his conscience. He could never tell Kat about that secret, small part of himself. that didn't want to go home at all. The part that had opened up the second he met Liv. Possibly even before. Possibly when he was running through the streets of this strange world. Lost and confused and free. The part that thought just for a moment that he might have a purpose in the world other than the one he'd been born to. Every second he'd been with Liv, his true life had felt so far away. Living in his princely suite, hunting in the forests, having banquets with his parents and the townsfolk, marrying Kat, all of that seemed, for the first time, changeable. The future hinted at other things, and it had felt good. But that feeling had clouded his judgment, and now they were here. "He really will be fine," Kat said, misinterpreting Cedric's silence. "And when we are home, we could deal with what M has done." Cedric started, even though M now sat, improbably, just 20 feet away from him. He hadn't given her much thought since the moment Merrick collapsed. "We should not be too harsh," Kat said, her voice low. "I cannot imagine what it must have been like for her, locked up in a cell all this time." "Do you think she is right? That we should barter Liv and her siblings for our parents' freedom?" He didn't dare to look at Kat while waiting for her answer. She sounded hesitant when she answered. "Are you having doubts about your decision to keep them safe?" Cedric sighed. "I doubt everything. If I were a stronger leader, I would trade over Liv, her brother, and sister without hesitation to free our families." "Then you would be an idiot." Surprised, Cedric looked over to Kat. Her jaw was set, determined. "Why do you think I supported your decision?" Kat asked. "Have I ever struck you as being overly fond of Liv?" Cedric gave a small smile. "Not particularly." Kat continued. "I trust you, Cedric, but I know you have feelings for her. And when we open that portal and part ways, I will be happy to never hear the name Liv Phillips for as long as I live." Kat moved to stand in front of Cedric, so she was facing him. "I supported your decision because it was the right one. What assurances do you have that Malquin would even hold his promise to M? Why would he free the king and queen? It makes no sense. And once he has what he wants, who knows what he will do then? The scrolls are our greatest leverage against him, and we cannot just hand them over." Kat paused before adding, "I think your father would agree." Cedric's eyes fell to the floor. Just hearing the word father was like taking a blow to the stomach. And was it true? Would his father agree with him? Would his father approve of anything he'd done since falling out of that portal and landing in the middle of this foreign world? Probably not. Still, Kat believed in him. That meant something. "Thank you," he said. "Of course," she said, then turned back to face the window. "It has been a rough few days. A rough few months, really. But we have all survived. And soon, everything will be as it was. You will see." Cedric wished he could believe her, and even more, he wished that her vision of the future could provide some bit of comfort. But he was beginning to suspect already that some things, once changed, could never really be the same again. Not Calum, not Merrick, not M, not even himself. Liv knew she was exhausted, but a prickly sort of energy kept her from dozing off in the waiting room chair. It had been only a few days since she'd sat here, alone, waiting to hear about Rita's fate. Now she was in a similar position, but somehow, impossibly, she was surrounded by her family. It seemed crazy to have Peter on one side of her, and Daisy on the other. Daisy slumped against her plastic seat back, eyes falling shut every few moments. But Peter was wide awake and sparking. He wanted to hear everything about what had happened to Liv. She told him in hushed tones, while Cedric and Kat whispered by the window, and M stared at her, warily. from a few chairs over.
"It's all so hard to believe,"
Peter said for the millionth time. Shannon, who was sitting next to Peter, responded before Liv could.
"Believe it."
"But there's a whole other world. Isn't that intense? Scientists have been looking for other worlds for who knows how long, and now we know of one that exists, and we can get there any time we want."
"It's not that simple," Liv said, a bit uneasily. She thought of Malquin's damaged arm and his even more damaged plan. She thought of earthquakes and fire and holes in the world. But she didn't say any of this out loud. She didn't want to scare off her brother now that she'd just gotten him back. Peter uncrossed his long arms and leaned forward in his chair, his legs bouncing with jittery energy.
"Things like this are rarely simple."
"You have a lot of experience with traveling between worlds, do you?" Shannon cut in.
Peter pushed his glasses up his nose again.
"Not actual experience? No, not yet."
Liv was about to ask what Peter meant when Joe was suddenly there, standing at the door of the waiting room. She jumped up and ran over to him, but she wasn't as fast as Cedric and Kat.
"Merrick is stable," Joe said right away, "but he's not out of the woods entirely."
"Woods?" Cedric asked, his voice tinged with panic.
"I'm sorry. I meant to say that Merrick should be fine," Joe responded. Like everyone else, he had dark circles under his eyes. "He had a pretty significant concussion, a type of wound caused by a knock to the head, and the blood loss and smoke inhalation didn't help. The doctors want to keep him here for another day at least, but probably more."
Cedric breathed out slowly, and Kat put an arm on his shoulder.
"We will stay here then," she said.
Joe shook his head. "Unfortunately, you can't. The police are already on their way to question me about what happened to Merrick. I can try to answer their questions as best I can, but with all of you here, especially you, Cedric, it will be too difficult."
"Why especially him?"
Liv hadn't even noticed that Peter had come up to stand behind her until he spoke.
"Cedric is currently wanted by the police, and even if that weren't true, it's too dangerous having you all here out in the open where anyone could find you or ask questions. If your names and descriptions got into the wrong file, the Knights could track you down all over again."
Liv nodded, but Cedric shook his head.
"We cannot just leave Merrick behind."
"I'm not suggesting you leave your friend behind," Joe said.
"Just let me handle this situation and lie low for a couple of days. It's the only way to keep you from behind bars."
Even Cedric seemed to understand that expression. "But where will we go?" Liv interjected.
"My place is too risky," Joe said. "I have no idea if Malquin knows where it is or if he still has rats here doing his bidding."
Joe's eyes shot to M, but she was all wide eyes and innocence.
"Plus, there are the Knights. If they haven't connected me to the three of you yet, they surely will soon. You need a better place to hide," Joe said.
"Hide?" Peter exclaimed. "Aren't these the villains who killed your little brother, Joe? We should fight them."
None of the group, still tired and covered in a layer of ash and bruises, answered him.
"I think I might know of a place."
A voice piped up from the plastic chairs behind them. Liv turned, surprised to see that Daisy was fully awake and standing.
"I mean, if you don't mind the beach."
"The beach?" Peter asked.
"My parents have a house in Malibu," Daisy said. "It's not super big, just like 4 bedrooms, but it's pretty secluded."
Liv's eyes didn't go to Joe's, but to Cedric's. He stared at her for just a moment before giving a brief nod and turning away. Liv nodded too.
"Malibu it is."
The City's End. The Malibu beach house was surrounded on 3 sides by an iron fence, even though there wasn't another house nearby for nearly a half mile in each direction. The 4th side of the estate sat on a rocky bluff that faced the ocean. A winding set of stairs ran from the back door of the not-super-big house
down to the pristine, empty beach. The room where Liv was now resting with Peter and Daisy was equally pristine, though Daisy claimed it hadn't been used in months. She was able to get inside the gates with a code, though they'd had to break into the actual house by smashing through a window, since Daisy couldn't risk going back to her old house for the key. Before leaving the hospital, she'd asked Joe if he could at least check up on what had happened to the two security guards at her parents' estate. As for what he'd tell her parents or even the police, Liv could only guess. Cedric and Kat didn't want to leave Merrick completely alone while Joe talked with police officers, so Shannon had agreed to stay on in the waiting room. She, after all, had parents who could vouch for her, even if they would be furious with her for sneaking out of the house. Again. So Liv had hugged Shannon tight, thanked her, and apologized, though how could any thanks or apologies ever be enough, and left her behind, taking Joe's van along with the others out to Daisy's beach house. And even though Liv hadn't slept in who knew how many hours, and was now sitting on the softest mattress she'd ever felt in her life, she still couldn't force her eyes to close. There was no way she could sleep, not with Peter and Daisy there in the same room with her. Daisy was curled up against a pillow next to Liv, her feet swinging over the edge of the bed. She was cleaned and showered, and unlike the others, had barely a scratch to show for the horror movie-like experience she'd just been through. For the first time in hours, Daisy seemed more like her regular self, like the girl who had stood with her hands on her hips and challenged a group of strangers trespassing on her lawn. "Can I see your tattoo, or whatever it is?" Liv asked Peter, who was sitting on the twin bed opposite. Peter shrugged and half-turned, lifting up his shirt to show his markings. It was an exact replica of Liv's. "Joe said that you must have had it when we were kids," Liv said. "But I don't remember." "I kinda do," Peter replied, pulling his shirt back down over his lanky torso. "Mom was really worried, and we went to a few doctors. I didn't understand what was happening, really."
"Do you remember the fire?"
Daisy asked. The way she asked it, so lightly, was jarring to Liv. Then she realized Daisy probably had no memories of it, and was thankful for that. Peter exchanged a quick look with Liv. His expression, so serious, tugged at the corners of her memory in an unpleasant way. It wasn't just that he was so similar to the 8-year-old boy Liv once knew. It was that he was a mix of that boy and their father. Liv could see it now, and it brought back images of her father she'd been pushing down for years. The sweep of his hairline, the ears that stuck out just a bit too far, the mouth that was just a bit too big for his face. "Yes," Peter responded. "I do." Daisy looked like she was about to ask more questions about it, so Liv cut her off, trying to keep her voice light. "So, what have you been up to, Peter? Where do you live? Where do you go to school? I want to know all about you." Liv shot a glance to Daisy. "About both of you." Peter leaned back heavily against the wall, stretching his legs out horizontally over the edge of the bed. "Not much to know, really. I've been in a bunch of foster homes, most of them in Fresno. 4 different high schools. It was hard to make friends that way until I got into D&D.
D&D?
Daisy asked.
"Dungeons and Dragons. It's this role-playing game. Kind of hard to describe.
But there was always a group of kids who played it in every high school I went to, which was nice. Like, wherever I went, I had a kind of home, you know?" Liv nodded. "But now, looking back on it, I wonder if there was more to it," Peter continued, his eyes taking on a far-off look. "I always kind of felt like I was preparing for something. Like, I always knew the world had more to offer me than trig tests and crappy foster parents. I always had this feeling like I was kind of, I guess, different somehow. More than other people. And now I know that's true."
Peter smiled, but a chill ran down Liv's spine. Peter's words called Malquin to mind, sitting in that warehouse and putting a gnarled finger to her face. "We're survivors. Special. Why waste time thinking about those who aren't?
I don't know if being different has worked out for us so far. If we're going to stay safe, we may need to go into hiding.
Liv looked to Daisy. How Joe is going to convince your parents of that, I have no idea.
I doubt Mike and Shana will mind, Daisy said, shrugging. They've been trying to get me to go to boarding school for years.
Or to start building off-Broadway cred in New York. Her eyes drifted.
I wonder if anyone's told them yet about what happened at the house.
Liv reached over carefully to touch Daisy's shoulder. She was worried her sister might pull away, but she didn't.
Do you get along with them? Your parents?
Peter asked, either not sensing Daisy's sudden sadness or trying to distract her from it.
Daisy shrugged one shoulder. I mean, they're great and everything. They got me this moped for my birthday, had it painted pink and all. But sometimes I wonder, I don't remember my birth parents at all. Our parents. What were they like?
Thankfully, Peter spoke first.
I wish I could tell you what they were like as people, he said, but I only knew them as a kid. I didn't know if they were smart or funny or cool. They took care of me when I was sick and told us stories at bedtime. He shrugged. They were parents.
Daisy nodded, as if this answered her question.
She swung her legs up onto the bed and lay back on her pillow. I'm glad I found you guys, even if this has been the weirdest night of my whole life.
Liv smiled.
Me too.
Hopefully things won't get too much weirder.
I hope they do, Peter said, flopping back onto his own pillow.
Liv gave a weak smile. She couldn't fault Peter for thinking all of this was exciting. After all, he hadn't been in that warehouse. If he had actually seen the portal in front of him, seen Malquin's face, seen the wraths for himself, he'd probably think a little differently.
Liv lay down next to Daisy and tried again to shut her eyes. Somewhere else in the house, Cedric, Kat, and Em were also trying to get a little sleep. She wondered if they were more successful.
Before Liv finally fell asleep, a memory came to her. She, Peter, and Daisy were much smaller, riding in the back seat of their parents' car. It was dark out, the radio was on low, and heat blasted gently from the radiator, wrapping her in warmth. Her parents murmured in the front seat, and Peter's sleeping form slumped against her shoulder. She didn't know how old she was or where they were going, but she remembered the feeling of it, of being surrounded by family, being safe.
Liv woke up to the sound of the world coming apart. She was pitched from her bed and landed with a violent crash on the floor. Her first coherent thought was earthquake, but she couldn't remember exactly where she was. Was she back in her bedroom at Rita's, or still in the Echo Park house?
Liv crawled toward where she believed the doorway to be, but instead smacked hard into a bedpost. Then something heavy with elbows landed directly on top of her. Daisy. Everything snapped into focus.
Daisy!
Liv screamed as the bedroom shook around her. A lamp crashed down to the floor and the windows rattled.
We have to get to the doorway!
Daisy scrambled up into the doorway, with Liv close behind. She put her hands up over her neck to protect her head, a lifetime of earthquake response training kicking into gear. The bedroom window shattered inward, and both girls screamed. A terrible thought struck Liv, and she looked over to the opposite twin bed.
Peter!
The bed was empty, the sheets trailing onto the floor.
I have to go find him.
Liv started to move out of the doorframe, but Daisy grabbed her wrist.
No, don't go!
Liv wrapped her free hand around Daisy's and huddled close to her. In the hallway outside, a picture frame smashed to the floor. The ground shook for what felt like minutes before finally petering out. By the time the world was still again, both girls were surrounded by wreckage. The broken pieces of a bookshelf, the shards of a lamp.
We have to get to the others, Liv said.
She pulled Daisy up, and they slowly worked their way down the glass-strewn hallway. Liv needed to make sure everyone else was okay, but most of all she needed for her gut feeling to not be true. They walked into the main living room, which was a giant mess of furniture and debris. Afternoon sunlight streamed in through the painless holes in the walls. Joe entered the room through the kitchen, looking shaken. Liv realized he must have arrived at the house while she was asleep. "Is everyone okay?" he asked. "I don't know," Liv said. "Where are Shannon and Merrick?"
"Still at the hospital."
Kat raced down the stairwell. "The earth moved again," she said, her voice shakier than Liv was used to hearing it.
"Another portal?" Joe said.
"No,"
Liv wanted to say, but couldn't find her breath.
"Where's Cedric and Peter?" Joe asked. He picked his way across the living room toward Liv.
"No, no, no."
Kat looked pale. Cedric would never
what?
Everyone turned to see Cedric walk in through the front door. His eyes were wild, desperate. They scanned the damage, took in the figures in the room.
"Where's Em?"
"Liv, Cedric, look." Joe pointed to the opposite wall of the room. Someone had taken a marker and written over the white wall in large letters. Liv held her breath as she silently read the words, and her worst suspicions were confirmed. "Dear Cedric," it began, "I hope you understand why I had to do this. Peter came willingly, and I hope the rest will follow. I promise he will be all right. We all will, so long as we do what Malquin says. Please forgive me. Your M." Beneath her message was a shorter one, scrawled out in messy letters. "Liv and Daisy, this was something I had to do. I hope to see you both soon." Liv's knees buckled beneath her, and she took an involuntary step back to steady herself. Cedric walked slowly to the wall and ran his hand over M's words.
"How could she do that?"
Cedric asked. His voice was low, as though he was talking to himself.
"How could she just leave?"
No one answered. They all gathered closer to the words on the wall, and Liv focused on her brother's messy scrawl. She remembered the gleam in his eyes when he'd talked about being special. Had Em overheard him talking in the hospital waiting room? Did she know that he would be an easy target? His handwriting on the wall was heartbreakingly familiar. It was the same as it had been when Peter was small.
"I'm going after them," Liv said. She was surprised by the force of her own voice.
Cedric spun around. "No." He looked around the room, as if searching for support, first to Kat, then to Joe.
"That's exactly what Em wants you to do, Liv," Joe said. "That's why she convinced Peter to go with her. She knew you'd follow, and she could hand you over to Malquin, but you can't."
"Yes, I can. He's my brother. I just got him back, and I'm not losing him again."
"We already agreed,"
Cedric said, moving closer to Liv.
"Malquin only needs 2 scrolls. If he has Peter, and he gets you, we cannot let that happen."
"He's right," Kat said. Cedric nodded.
"You can't stop me."
Liv moved closer to Cedric. She straightened and looked up into his eyes. They burned with intensity, but she didn't care. Hers felt just as bright.
"I'm a Skrull, remember? I can open a portal any time I want. I'll go alone if I have to. To get Peter back, I will."
"Liv," Joe started, walking up to her. She spun to face him.
"I will. You'll have to chain me up, Joe, I swear. And even then, I'll find a way."
Liv put every ounce of conviction she had behind her words.
"He's my family, Joe. My brother."
Joe flinched, and Liv knew she'd hit the right nerve. He'd let his own brother go, all those years ago, back when Malquin was just John. Liv knew the kind of person that Joe was, and knew how it must have eaten him up inside to not go after his brother. He'd had 2 once, and lost them both. When Joe spoke, he was quiet. "If you open the portal alone, it will chew you up, just like it did to John. Not if we do it right, if we all open it together and use blood."
Liv looked to Cedric briefly, then barreled on. I'll be the only one who crosses through, but if the three of us open it together, it should work right. I saw how Malquin did it.
But Peter didn't, Joe said. His expression was all sympathy, which Liv could barely tolerate. He must have opened a portal for him and Em alone, without knowing the right things to do. There's no way to know if he survived.
The pit of fear in Liv's stomach spread. She shook her head.
No, he's alive. He has to be.
She couldn't accept that he wasn't. That she had found Peter again after all these years, to have only a few hours with him. It wasn't possible that he was gone forever. It wasn't.
I have to find him, she managed to say.
So you could get hurt too? Even if the three of us open a portal safely and you cross through, you'll be all alone.
She's not going alone, Cedric said. When he looked at Liv, his eyes weren't just hard. They were angry. She never imagined he could look at her that way.
She forced herself to look away.
We will go with her, obviously.
What about Merrick? Kat said. Cedric kept his eyes and his anger on Liv, but his words were directed at Joe.
Is there any additional news on Merrick's condition?
The doctors want to keep him under observation for a few days. I won't be able to get him out until he can walk on his own, which might be a while.
We don't have time, Liv whispered. She held Cedric's stare.
We know Merrick will be okay, at least, but Peter, if he's hurt, I need to find him and bring him back now.
What about me?
Daisy suddenly stepped up. I want to go. He's my brother, too.
Liv exchanged a panicked look with Joe, then turned to her sister.
I can't risk you, too. Besides, you have people here who care about you.
Daisy rolled her eyes and muttered under her breath, but her face looked unsure.
I know it might not seem that way, but your parents do care. They cared enough to adopt you, to raise you.
Daisy swallowed. You can't just leave them behind, Liv said. She walked over to Daisy and pulled her into a hug.
Besides, I won't be long. I'll find Peter and be back here before you know it.
Her words caught in her throat as Daisy gripped her back, hard. She hoped she sounded convincing. The Hole in the Sky, Part 2. They walked down the beach for a long time, following the narrow strip of sand between water and cliff. Joe led the way, followed by Liv and the others. The nearest neighbor to Daisy had a fire engine parked outside, and Liv hoped the morning's earthquake hadn't caused too much trouble. She thought of the ruined buildings surrounding the burned warehouse in Venice. Joe had told her they were mostly boat storage units, and no people had been on the scene other than the knights and wraiths. Still, Liv didn't want too much more destruction on her hands. After a half hour of walking, they stopped in front of a long stretch of cliff.
This seems to be pretty isolated, Joe said.
Minimal damage.
Liv nodded, but she knew there was no way any of them could be sure that was true. So much harm had already been done.
She looked to Daisy, who looked so young, so small, standing there. If she left, how could she be sure Daisy would stay safe? Was it worth it to go? Her eyes met Cedric's then. He stared her down, his blue eyes nearly translucent in the bright morning light. And she realized what it must be like for him, all the time, having to make the hard decisions. Liv wished she had a script she could follow, beats laid out to let her know she was on the right track, but there was no way to know which choice was right until after it was already made. The only way to decide, in the moment, was to determine which path was the one she could live with the least, and then take the other one. Liv turned back to Joe.
Let's do this.
Wait, Daisy said, stepping toward Liv. I have something for you.
She thrust out a small black backpack.
It's an earthquake kit.
Liv smiled. Thanks, but if this actually works, you might need that more than me.
Daisy pushed the backpack into Liv's hands. It has water and a flashlight and walkie-talkies, just in case you run into stuff.
Her voice wavered, and for a moment,
She looked uncertain, younger than 13. Liv smiled and put on the backpack.
Thanks, Daisy.
Daisy shrugged, then stood taller, suddenly looking more like herself.
No big deal. We have like 4 more of them back at the house.
Liv looked to Joe. He gave a brief nod and stepped between Liv and Daisy, so the 3 of them faced an empty stretch of air between the surf and the cliff.
You remember the words Malquin spoke?
Joe asked Liv.
Yes,
she said. She didn't know how she'd ever forget.
And there's the second thing we need.
Blood. Cedric's voice was flat. Our blood.
Liv nodded. So I can go through without being hurt, hopefully. Cat handed Cedric a knife. He quickly put it against his palm and slit downward. A drop of his blood leaked out through his clenched fingers and spilled to the sand. Fighting the rising bubble of fear in her stomach, Liv reached out toward Cedric. She took his injured hand in hers, the first time they'd touched since the pier, and possibly the last time they would. Sure, he'd agreed to take her to Calum, but she knew his resolution from the pier still stood. He'd keep his distance. The blood felt warm against her palm, and she pulled her hand back quickly.
Thank you, she whispered.
Liv turned back to Joe and Daisy. She thought about the swirling portal in the warehouse, the surging open blackness. She breathed in deep.
Repeat after me.
Ecco libratum.
Ecco indux vitae.
She felt it immediately, a light buzzing under her skin that surged quickly. Magic.
Ecco libratum, ecco indux vitae.
Liv heard Joe's deep voice and Daisy's higher one joining in. Or no, not heard, but felt. Their voices were energy, mixing with her own. She repeated the words over and over in her mind, no longer even sure she was saying them out loud. The world around her took on a brief technicolor focus, then went fuzzy around the edges. Then she could see it, a small hole right in front of her, a pinprick. It slowly opened upward, or rather, it tore. Through the air it shimmered and grew until it expanded outward in a rough circle. The portal. She had created it. Liv exhaled. She'd done it. She felt exhausted, spent. All the energy she'd brought up inside of herself had been expelled and was now swirling around in thin air before her. A tear in the world. Cedric stepped up behind Liv. She could feel his presence there without turning around.
Time to go,
he said. Joe and Daisy stepped aside, and Cat assumed their place. Her face was bright as she looked at the portal.
Home,
she said, a smile on her lips. She turned to Cedric.
See there.
She took off at a light run and jumped through the portal. Cedric was next. He turned to Joe.
Thank you for all your help. With Merrick and everything.
Of course, Joe said. He met Liv's eyes. Look after each other, and Shannon, till I get back, she said. It hit her how sad it was she had so few people to say goodbye to. And would Shannon understand why she'd had to leave her behind? Tell her... Liv's words were cut off by a huge smashing noise. The ground shook beneath her, but right before she fell to the sand, she saw that a large portion of the nearby cliff was cascading downward.
We have to go, now, Cedric said.
The ground shook again and was followed by another noise, but this wasn't the crashing of rocks. It was a wheezing, straining noise, like air being let out of a balloon.
What is that? Joe asked.
The portal. Liv didn't know. She hadn't heard the noise when the portal was open at the warehouse. She barely had time to shake her head before Cedric reached for her.
Liv,
she grabbed his hand. Together, they moved to the swirling black hole. Liv turned her head once to say goodbye to Daisy and Joe, but they weren't looking at her anymore. They were staring at the sky above them,
The sky that was roiling, darkening, changing from light blue to orange, then red. Thick clouds moved impossibly fast across the ocean, and with their burnished color, they looked like a spreading fire.
What?
Liv's voice was swallowed by the great expanse of darkness as Cedric pulled her farther into the portal. The last thing she saw was the fear on Daisy and Joe's faces as they stared at the impossibly vivid sunset. Liv's final confused thought was, "But it's the middle of the day." Then there was nothing. The New World. Liv was lying on the ground. Hard ground, familiar ground. It didn't work, she thought. I'm still home. Relief flooded through her, then shame. She hadn't realized how big a part of her wanted to stay on Earth until she'd failed to leave it. Liv opened her eyes to see a bright sky. It was whitish gold and clear. Her ears were ringing, and she focused on her own breathing. What could she feel? Her body beneath her, intact. She raised her palm to her face and saw streaks of dried blood there. Cedric's blood. Liv started to sit up, and her muscles groaned. She felt as though she'd just done 500 sit-ups. She was lying next to a crop of spiky blue flowers. They were larger than any flower Liv had ever seen in person. What were they? She sat up farther and gasped. There, in front of her, was a giant mountain range with points that reached up into the sky. They seemed to go on forever, farther than Liv could see, before fading away into a white haze. And 10 feet away from her, punching a hole through the air right in front of the picturesque vision of the mountain range, was a dark portal. This wasn't home. Liv slowly struggled to her feet. She was in a giant meadow full of blue flowers, some of which grew up to her waist. Everything was large and wrong somehow, like she was in a dream, but the pain in her body told her she was awake.
"Are you okay?"
Liv turned at the sound of the voice and saw Cedric standing near her.
I think so,
Liv said. She looked around again. Holy crap. A few steps from Cedric, Kat was spinning in place, grinning. She bent down to the ground and picked up a handful of dark soil. Cedric turned to Liv, and though she knew he was still angry with her, his blue eyes were shining. Welcome to Calum.
This is Amanda Dolan. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of The Marked Girl by Lindsay Klingel. This program was produced by John Marshall Media, executive producer Caitlin Gehring. Text copyright 2016 by Lindsay Klingel. Production copyright 2016 by HarperCollins Publishers. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.